The WhatsApp message says, "This by-election will be nothing like past by-elections. The Mayor Motley-led BLP will make all things in St. George North new, roads, jobs, water, improve housing, etc., while the other parties will try to discredit and speak ill of Ms. Moore, resulting in the BLP being victorious." That's the way politics works all the time. Fix the road, trim the hedge, promise a school, build a pavilion, new school to come. Under the last administration, how many times we heard that there was going to be a new hospital? That's politics. And, you know, that's one of the reasons. I really got to keep saying this because I think people don't get the distinction. I love politics. I like everything but politics. What I don't like is the character assassination. And that's why I pointed out to one of the callers that what amuses me when I sit either in this chair or when I sit up on the other side as the producer is when people who I have heard, and I got them recorded, because this station records everything it does. By law, we have to do it. As the producer of the program, I edit and podcast, or John would edit and podcast when he produces. Sometimes we help each other out. But here's the thing. I have recordings of people who called this program for 5, if not 7 years and said that Prime Minister Frondell Stewart was the best thing to happen to Barbados. Excellent strategist. He would win by a landslide. The rest of the parties, again, nowhere. Miss Motley would be this and Miss Motley was that and all kinds of things. The Barbados Labour Party won 30-0. And the very next call-in program we had, Miss Motley is the greatest thing since Moses parted the Red Sea. The Israelites have returned to Jerusalem. Mr. Stewart said nothing. He ain't no use. The Democratic Labour Party be in the wilderness for 50. These same people, you know. Nobody else. These same people. The same voice. I got them on record. Now, when that person called me as the moderator, the host of this program, and attempt to tell me that bundle of piffle, you expect me to sit down and listen to it and say nothing? I will, because it ain't make no sense. I can't convince them to say anything that I consider to be serious. So I just let them talk. It confuses me. I have said to the one or two people I have talked to, and there ain't many, that if I was a leader of party, there's some people that pay not to call the radio station. Pay them more than they say I would pay people to vote. I will call them and tell them, I will give you a monthly salary. Sit down here in my office and do nothing. Don't pick up the phone. Don't call. Don't say nothing on my behalf. Just hush. But guess what? They are the people who seem to think they're influencers and they could get other people to follow them and vote for the party or the candidate of their choice. Why do you think I still sit down here moderating? Because I ain't an influencer. I am not seen as being able to influence nobody. All the influencers have been taken care of, including them that's called the program all the time and switch from one side to the other smoother than a synchromesh gearbox, if you're old enough to remember what that was. I know why John's stroking his beard and laughing. Brass Tacks, good afternoon. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes, ma'am.
How are you?
I am being good, I trust.
Good. I waited very long to speak to you. I know I don't have a lot of time with you. So I just want to preface my comments on two things. Mm-hmm. I'm not a regular caller, mm-hmm. one. And two, my comments aren't politically affiliated to any party. Mm-hmm. My focus is service and results. Now, Mr. Johnson, have you tried doing any business with any of the government offices recently?
No.
Well, I am in a position where several persons who have been displaced because of the COVID situation would ask for advice as it relates to severance, their rights and so on, because that's my professional field. And, Mr. Johnson, you know what concerns me? I understand with COVID, the changes, or what we call the new normal, that we are limiting the amount of face-to-face interaction. And therefore, tell me, I would like to get your perspective on this. If that is the case, don't you think that some mechanism should be put in place to allow people to call and get their questions answered? We have a number of people, and I know they're high volumes, and I know that. And so you would have to wait, just like I patiently waited here for about an hour and 40 minutes to get through to you. But I am speaking on the behalf of several individuals. I have spoken to 7 people this week alone, up to yesterday, because I tried yesterday to get through. And let me tell you, one lady said to me, well, she lives in Hillaby and bus fare and so on. She has been calling the labor office for the entire week. The entire week. And not a response. Don't take my word for it, Mr. Johnson. Try it. Right? I myself trying to help people to get answers. Because one person said they went to NIS some weeks ago and I know the Severance Payment Act, and there's something strange that one of the employees there said to her. And I am calling now to clarify if there's been a change. The government has made some arrangement because of the COVID scenario. Mr. Johnson, if you don't be, call. Try calling and see what happens.
Let me tell you why I won't try calling. Because I know I would not get through. Here's what I think is unfortunate. I think it's an unfortunate occurrence when we tout the use of technology. We have a complete ministry of smart technology that's supposed to be transforming the public sector and the private sector too, not immune from this piece of criticism. Calls can be forwarded. Call centers can be created in cases of emergency where business can be fast-tracked by sending the calls to person or persons, and you should be able to do more if the people are at home, where they can answer the phone, take the complaint, get in touch with the party that they need to get in touch with, find an answer, and get back to you in the space of less than 15 minutes. Technology allows to do that. People who call and complain about Flow and Digicel and calling and people answering from Jamaica and people answering from Trinidad, that is how it's set up. I got a message here that says, tell her try calling Scotiabank. Precisely what I'm talking about. It happens, ma'am, unfortunately, because we talk about technology, we talk about advancement, but we don't take the steps to make sure that they work. Even in a COVID environment, if you wanted a question from, let's say, the Ministry of Education about a student revolving loan, and let's say, you know, that department was down to a skeleton staff and not allowing people to come in with 5 of them standing in the lobby, would it not be possible to call and say, look, I am so-and-so. This is my contact information. Even if they have a way of saying, can you verify who you are so they don't give the information to the wrong person, an email address to send it to, or something or the other, where you say, this is my query. The person says, okay, I'll get in touch with the officer. We'll get back to you via email. Would that work for you?
Of course.
Listen, okay. I just ask it if that would work. Now, does that not seem a system that could work?
You are on point. Because you are speaking about solutions.
But that's what we need to get to.
That is where my challenge is. I am about service and about results. And my challenge is, and I'm not going to make any excuses for it, is that when you go into these government offices where these public servants are working, they behave as though you are begging. And you have to stand up and tolerate and take everything that they're doing. And I am putting a challenge out there to the current government, and I know they can do it. Get your as the largest employer in the island, get your people working for their money. Get your people providing proper service to the public. And I am acting and I'm incensed on behalf of those other persons who doesn't have the wherewithal, or even they don't even have the enthusiasm or motivation, and they're just tired and they're fed up. I had one other person on Tuesday ask for my assistance and said to me they're right to NAS, thinking that they will get it. If they go early, they will beat the long wait. Right at 7 o'clock, Mr. Johnson, at 7 a.m., and at 2 o'clock, we're still at NAS. Can you believe it?
Yes, I could.
This cannot continue. Yes, somebody has to step up and say, look, we need to, we are touting that we are this, we are so literate and we are so educated, but we are poor on service. And I am throwing it all, sorry that I have to paint all of them with the same brush, but I can call BRA, Labor Office, NAS, Licensing Authority. All these places need to up their game as it relates to service.
Ma'am, you know, you've just touched on a very crucial one, because I had a conversation with Ms. Lazar from the BRA off the air before she went on air, and that was one of the questions I asked her. I even asked the minister when he had the opportunity to chat with me on the program, and he promised to talk to the permanent secretary and get back to me. He hasn't yet done so, but I hope he will. The situation with stickers and tags on cars in Barbados. According to the information, once you pay your insurance, the insurance company will send the information to BRA or the licensing authority first, whichever one it goes to first. It will then go to the next agency, and then it will go to the post office and be mailed it to you. There are people who say they've received theirs. There are others who have been waiting since March, April, May, June, July, August, September. Now, my question is, where is the breakdown? Is the breakdown in the post office not sending them out fast enough? Is the breakdown in the insurance companies not feeling that they have to do it? Is the breakdown in the Barbados Revenue Authority not sending it to the licensing authority, or the licensing authority not sending it to the Barbados Revenue Authority? Where is the breakdown? The public will never know, because every department will say we're doing our part. And it is cases like these that make us the laughing stock.
Mm-hmm.
When we promise to deliver things within 24 hours, 48 hours, or a police officer stops you and asks, where is your sticker? And you tell him the story that I just tell you, and he says, I ain't know nothing about that. You're supposed to go and line up. And you go and you line up, and when you get to the top of the line, an hour later or half an hour later, you're told, we're not issuing stickers, we ain't have them, it can come to you in the mail. What do you do at that point? You see, those are the nitty-gritty things, the little things that make the bigger issues seem like not my concern. But
yes,
if we don't fix the system, and I'm not trying to blame anybody.
Also, let me ask,
because if I can't get home and I worry about my children, I ain't really worried about you standing up in front of me asking about your car, because I got to catch the bus and I'm late, right? So that's why sometimes you get an attitude. And my boss and my back too.
I want to ask you, Mr. Johnson, whose responsibility it is to fix these little things, these little niggling things that
the people who sit in the parliament and make the regulations, ma'am.
All right.
But apparently they don't seem to have control over getting it down the line.
So something needs to be done. But Mr.
The
Johnson,
permanent secretary is the person who is supposed to do this, and the deputy permanent secretary is supposed to do that. Ma'am, let me tell you why I don't pick on people, eh? And I'll tell you why I don't pick on people on purpose. I have a big mouth. I do it on purpose. I have a big mouth. I talk on the radio regular. People know my name and they know who I am. Let's say the secretary, you hear who I tell you, right? The secretary. The secretary at, let me pick a institution, Tongue Planning. Let's say the secretary at Tongue Planning don't like the way I talk about her party or her representative.
Mm-hmm.
Or the receptionist or somebody lower down the totem pole. So I walk in and I hand in my drawings from my house. Mm-hmm. And look at it and go, wait, Dennis Johnson, no, you got a big house though. Yeah, you get all this money to build this big house. And you mount all this, well, this file going to go here soon.
Right? Going to
I don't know where it goes. I'm just telling you. The file go there soon. So here am I, 6 months later, waiting on my file and saying tongue planning, dragging their foot, and the minister need to look into that, and the chief tongue planner need to hear me. And somebody who may be off on leave, who really just want to squeeze me, who have the power to do it, because there's the secretary to the permanent secretary of the deputy secretary who decided to make my life miserable. I said what I just said to you to a minister of government, a new one at the time, who said to me, Dennis, if I ask that person for your file and they don't want that file to get to me, that file will go all the way around the world before it comes to my desk. And you're going to be harassing me, asking me every day what happened to the file. I'll be calling and asking what happened to the file, and you're going to be sent to somebody on maternity leave, who on long leave, who on leave from leave, and they think coming back to me in a hurry. And this was a minister of government who said that to me.
Unacceptable.
So, ma'am, I will ask, who can fix it?
In this position that we are in, the same foolishness he tell you is what has us in this position today. But I
know.
I know. You said that you are not an influencer. I beg to differ, right? I beg to differ. I think you're an influencer. And I want to put it out there that I want all these ministers that around election time, that was, remember I prefaced my comments, because I vote for person, I don't vote for party. You understand me?
Mm-hmm.
So I want, anytime I see a minister do something and that meaningful, he got my, I hear my constituency, he got my vote and he got my support. But I don't want all of the rhetoric and all the stuff. Make Barbados the efficient mechanism that we purporting, and stop allowing people who can't provide service to taint the organization. And I can tell anybody that's listening to this program today, try calling any of these places and see if you can get through. So I think that the government of Barbados, the prime minister, needs to, you see, she changed the cabinet recently, get them ministers to get the ministries up to them, get them people working. Do your work. You are a public servant. Do your work and serve the public. And stop treating people like second-class citizens, and like they're begging. You must do your work and fix the problem that we are trying to follow the protocols by not presenting ourselves to face-to-face contact, and nobody would answer a phone to deal with matters. This is stupidness, Dennis. You are an influencer. That's what I say. That's my perspective. And I really want to see our public service step up and become a cutting-edge organization and stop behaving like if they're just dragging day by day. And I know that their volumes, increased volumes and so on, but I also know that there are mechanisms. Employ the right people to manage these things.
Correct.
And get the public more satisfied with the service that the government offices are providing, because they are doing poorly at this juncture. And I am appealing, this is an appeal from me, a concerned citizen, a born and bred Barbadian, educated to at a very senior level, that I'm seeking to help some of these people who really can't understand what is happening and getting this type of treatment. No, Dennis, it's not right. So help me influence these people to step up and really do something like a mystery. You ever watch Undercover Boss?
No, ma'am, I don't watch TV. I'm sorry.
Well,
I really
don't. TV.
No,
you
I don't. I don't want to be influenced.
Get the real things. So what really happening?
All right, ma'am. Thanks. 4341790. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dennis.
Hi.
There are two issues I would like us to look at. Mm-hmm. You have said that Elton John and his partner are Rain, two boys.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
Now, do you happen to know how these two children refer to Elton John and his partner?
How would I know that, sir? I have no idea.
Or do you happen to know how children are, who are being raised by same-sex couples refer to these persons?
I have no idea, sir.
Right. Now, however they refer to these persons.
Their parents, I suppose that's what they call them.
If they call both of them daddy. If there are two men and they call both of them daddy. Mm-hmm. Or they call one daddy and one mommy. I'm saying that this situation is doing psychological damage to these children. Don't you agree?
So I can't make that statement, and I'll tell you why. If they're raised, right, into an environment that says you decide what your gender is, what you see as being the psychological damage to them?
I don't understand. If you say they are being raised...
Let me put it this way. You were raised in a certain way, and I was raised in a certain way. We were raised to recognize our father as being the male figure in the house, our mother as being the female figure in the house. Those of us who were raised with no father, like I was, didn't have anybody to recognize as being father. I had a mother and two aunts. They were all female. And I know who was mommy and who was auntie. But that's the way I was raised. I was raised to believe that I am a male. Right?
Yeah.
Good. If you have children who are being raised in an environment where they're either two males sharing the house and their partners, or two females sharing the house and their partners, and the child is raised to say, you will decide whether you're male, female, or whatever you want to be, where's the trauma? Because they'll be raised in an environment that's different from you and me, and the environment they inherit will be one that they have created for themselves. And you and I won't be around. Or we may be the ones who feel out of it.
But they're not going to remain in that environment. They
have sir?
When they go to school and so on.
Sir, but if they recreate... So you're missing my point, you know. If they recreate that environment, they will not be in a different environment. Do you know there are people who have children who have already determined they've got cases in the United States that are coming up all the time? Children 9 and 10 and 12 determining what they want to be. And now they're saying, don't put a gender on your birth certificate. Don't put a gender on your license. The person will determine what they want to be. So they're recreating another type of environment. You see what I'm saying? I ain't saying I agree with it. I ain't asking you to agree with it. I'm asking if you see what I'm saying.
I am saying that psychological damage is being done to these children. And I'm asking, who is looking after the rights of these children?
The people making the decision.
So are they qualified to make a decision?
Are you qualified to be a parent, or am I? I make decisions for my children. One is 41, one is 28, the other one can be 24. I've made decisions for them. They're now adults, they make their own decisions. But I have enough influence on them that I could see me reflected in what they do. I ain't got no qualifications to be a parent. I had sex, unprotected, a couple times. So my point is this. I was raised, and I will say it again, in a certain environment. That environment made me the person I am. So I've passed on that to my children. If there are children being raised today by persons who are creating a different environment for them, and they are going along with it, they will be in a different environment from the one that you and I grew up in. It may not be comfortable for you, it may not be comfortable for me, but it is their environment, and they will tell me that I am the outsider, as opposed to me telling them no, that they are the outsider. Lives have changed. People used to accept slavery. They don't anymore. We have changed because we have learned to adapt. And you and I will never adapt to a system that we were not grown and trained in. And that's a fact. Unless we want to.
All right, let's look at something else. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to me why we are going to have a referendum on same-sex marriages and nothing on being changed to a republic?
So because the issue of being changed to a republic was canvassed during general election some time ago, there was a whole constitutional review commission set up. The public was asked to give their opinions. Those opinions were canvassed and they stashed somewhere. I do not know where. So the public's view on a Republican constitution has already been canvassed and done. We had this discussion eons ago, sir.
So you don't see anything wrong with having the referendum on the same-sex marriage and nothing on republicanism?
So you're trying to get me to answer your questions because you want me to agree with you. Let me say to you, I am not here to agree with anybody or to put my opinion on anybody. No, let me finish the conversation. Mm. There was a referendum promised on same-sex marriage, underlining that for a reason. Because a marriage has to be recognized by church and by state. They're two separate entities. People go to church if they want to be churched, and then what the church does is the certificate then goes to the state, who then puts a stamp on it and recognizes your marriage that was done in a church. If you don't want to go to the church, you go to the state, you go to a magistrate, you go on the beach, you get somebody who has the power to put the stamp on a thing saying you are now legally joined in the eyes of the state. What the referendum is supposed to do is to make those two one. The recognition of a marriage by both the church and the state as being one. And people are asked to make a determination on that. That's different from saying, if you come from somewhere else and a state puts a stamp saying this is your union, we recognize what that state has done. We ain't asking nothing about church. There's a distinction between the two, sir.
Okay then. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot.
All right, sir.
Bye-bye.
That's how I see it, Daniel. Brass tacks, good afternoon.
Mr. Hello. Johnson?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes, sir.
Mohammed Nasser?
Mr. Nasser, how are you, sir? Been a while.
How are you doing?
I doing all right.
I was wondering, it don't matter to me because I don't work with him. I want over an hour and a half to talk to you.
Okay.
But anyway, first thing I want to say, you think it's time enough that we have a serious, I don't mean me, I mean the world, at least the black world, have a serious discussion on the genetics of black people?
And what do you think that would do, my friend?
Well, it will give us at least some understanding. You know, it can't really peep into your genes just so, but it ain't easy. But at least it will give us some understanding where we function, the way we function, versus how other people function. So, because we seem not to function in the same rational way as other people. And I can tell you why I say that, Mr. Other racist, don't say that. Some last week or sometime, I mean, I want to first thank all these wonderful people who give me so much praises and things. But as one individual was talking about cars. So I want to explain to you, Mr. Johnson, why I tell you that, why I say we got to start analyzing this thing. Some guy said that I used to have six cars, and that's why I got into problems. Six cars. Listen, it was not six. Mr. Johnson, I had my own car at work. Leroy Parrish used to work with me. He had his Monte Carlo. Frank Brand had his MGB, beautiful car. Marley, my sister, she has her Volkswagen, brand new. Ailey, my first wife, she had her Celica. I had a Jaguar. And by the way, I had 25 hired cars. It was no problem to nobody, you know. Everybody said, this young man. And by the way, and a cabin cruiser, 36 foot cabin cruiser, and every Sunday me and the white people and things that my friends out to see. None of that was any problem at all. Let me tell you, Mr. Johnson, and I am not saying this because you know me by now. And by the way, I want to say, Mr. Johnson, and I called you, I don't return my calls, and although I can't make you do it, I think sometimes you should return and call me. It's very important sometimes, but that's not our problem now. Let me ask you something. Mr. Johnson, when I'm now, as I know, everybody know my age now. I'm 80 years old. So anybody that's 50 years old, I was living 30 years before them. And anybody that's 40, I was living 40 years before them. And I hear Ellis said something the other day that really would need to be debated. Because I know it is true, but I was surprised to hear Ellis say it. Not that Ellis is any different, but I was surprised he said. He said they got to analyze between Gary Husband's and Mohamed Nasser. So I want to say to you, Mr. Johnson, when I was Gary Husband, every store in town, every hotel, everything in Barbados where there's metal products used to be from us. When I joined the Nation of Islam at 34 years old and took a stand in this country, not because I hate white people, and I don't really care if white people believe I hate them or not, because they have to first show love for the hate they bring to us. But this is what I'm saying. There was no problem in this country for me. I was just doing as I want until I start to wake up black people on the danger we're playing with, sitting back with our education and think that we're bright and not doing things to help our own. I want to find out if something is psychic. By the way, the late Earl Walton Burr, the only real serious prime minister we have had so far, Earl Walton Burr, and I keep saying that because he built a base and everybody have to live off his foundation. They can't change it. And the next thing, the leader of the union, Sir Frank Walcott, you will never be replaced as a genius, as a unionist. Because, again, he built the foundation and the union, even though we're going through the problems now, the union has been able to do a lot for our people. And then even before you get there, you get to Sir Grantley Adams. That man put his life and everything on the line and went into the fees. He was attorney at law, as everybody knows. But he sacrificed everything he could for black people. You think, Mr. Ellis, Mr. Johnson, they really frightened to sacrifice everything they got for black people? All I'm saying to people in this country is very simple. Something is fundamentally wrong when every government we change, the black people are in the same position or worse than they were before. And it needs to be looked at. You're not doing a hate. You're not doing a not ungratefulness or nothing. A lot of white people do things to me, but I do a lot for a lot of white people too. But all I'm saying, Mr. Johnson, for any time I change my name and decide that I am going to take a stand to improve the lives of black people in this country and get them a chance, a better opportunity, this whole system, not even worry about the black, because they never had nothing to bother me, but the whole white system change against me and do everything possible to destroy me. Well, I don't understand why you can't explain that. And they can't understand when I say that, why somebody believe that, that I don't like somebody if I say that, Mr. Johnson. That is foolishness. So I just want somebody to think about, we should have a discussion on the genes of black people to see if something has been fundamentally gone wrong with our genes that causes us to work against our own all the time and we don't understand we must work for ourselves. So that's why you want to put on the table, Mr. Johnson, if you're still there.
Sir, I'm still here. I don't go anywhere. I sit, I listen, I comment. seems I could never... As they say, well, Sparrow as a Kaiso, the old man, the young boy, and the donkey. Perhaps one of these days, as my introduction to brass tacks, I'll play it. If I interrupt, I interrupt too much. If I don't interrupt, people not sure that I hear. I'll explain why perhaps we behave the way we do when I get a chance to do it at some point. I want to leave you with this quotation that I came across recently. It said, at the heart of each legal claim are two key insights about free speech in a democratic system. First, the right of people to criticize and to share information about government officials is essential to democracy and the rule of law. Debate on public issues should be uninhibited, robust, and wide open. And that it may be well include vehement, caustic, and sometimes unpleasantly sharp attacks on government and public officials. Second, speech that scrutinizes government officials is as vulnerable as it is valuable. One need not be a hardened cynic to fear that those who wield power will use it to suppress their critics. Thank you, John, for taking care of things technical. Thank you for being a part of today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. On behalf of the team, I'm Dennis Johnson. Good afternoon.